Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, and you're listening to the Comic-Com, man. This is where you get all your comics info, and take that from a comics guy, a comic book man.
Everybody, welcome back to the Comic-Com podcast, season 3, episode 47. Like always, your two hosts, myself, Zach, and Justin, and we have an awesome, awesome episode for you today. But first, let's check in. Justin, what's going on over there?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Yeah, so this is obviously dropping after Thanksgiving. Hopefully everyone had a great Turkey Day, or if you're still celebrating out there, obviously dropping this on Black Friday. So get out there and buy some stuff, buy some comic books. I'm sure tons of comic shops are having tons of sales.
Yeah, dollar bins, right?
But yeah, it's been pretty good. I'm enjoying it so far with the week that we're having. It's odd that this is like probably one of the earliest recordings, like recording on a Tuesday in the afternoon, right? Sure. But we have a reason why we're recording in the afternoon.
Yes. So we have a very special guest. And if you guys, obviously you guys listen to every single thing we put out, and the ones who are listening last week or so, we talked about, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about the upcoming Carnage number one, written by Torin Grunbeck, who has graced us with her presence here on the Comic-Con podcast. Thank you so much, Torin, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, her address is 462.
Perfect.
Didn't want to dox you like we were talking offline, but she lives out in Norway, so we had to kind of work around what the time change was there. So what time is it there currently?
Well, I think it's like 7, but sincerely, people shouldn't. Like, my sleep schedule at this point is so atrocious. Like, that was just you being very kind and sweet. Oh, I'm on used excuse that I'm on American time, but it's just nonsense. That's what it is.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you're about 8 hours ahead of me, and what, Justin?
6 hours ahead of me.
6 hours ahead of you, yeah.
Yeah. So. Yet somehow I just woke up. Okay. I woke up. I had one meeting. Now I'm here. It's great.
Well, perfect. Well, here you go. This is now we get to have a little bit of fun early in your morning and our midday. So we'll get right into it. So a lot of stuff we want to talk to you about. But first, let's get to know you a little bit. What's your origin story? How did you kind of come about with comics? How'd you get to where you are right now?
Huh. Well, I mean, I'm very old. It's a long story.
So are we. It's okay.
Yeah. I feel it a lot when the winter sets in that I'm no longer young, not just because everything fucking hurts, but just because I keep talking about the weather and hating myself because I keep talking about the weather. Like, the young me would be just shocked and appalled by this twist in personality, but there we are. Well, I'm... what is my origin story? I'm a huge, like, nerdy person. I got a Commodore 64 when I was like 6, 7, something like that. And I obviously needed to learn English and writing to be able to use it. And I was always in a very sort of nerdy community of people. I got adopted by a couple of, not literally, but, you know, by some people who thought it was very sweet that I liked to just had an interest in computers and coding and everything, and as it all geeky people, I had a bunch of comics, so I was introduced to comics very early on, and we have some interesting comics in Norway too. Like, I used to, before I could read English, I used to read a lot of Valhalla, which is a Danish comic written by Peter Madsen, not the submarine killer, the other Peter Madsen, the nice one. At some point, when I got to the point where I could sort of read English with confidence, I started reading American comics, especially like Vertigo comics. Mm-hmm. This was in the 90s, and it was a great time for comics in many ways. Yeah, best time. I agree.
Yeah.
Because we will get to Carnage at some point, but which is sort of, it is such just 90s Cletus Cassidy, but you will see the, if you read Carnage, you will see the influences. So I got into a lot of Vertigo stuff, and especially like anything that felt, I like American nonsense. That was sort of my introduction to America, was through comics, I think, like comics and old westerns. Mm-hmm. Sort of hugely disappointed the first time I went to the Midwest, and I realized, oh, it's more like,
you got to go further west. You got to go
Where is my Western dreamland? Where is it?
By me. You got to go to like El Paso, Texas. You got to go to New Mexico. that area. That's like the Old West. That's what still exists with the Old West.
I took a train from LA to Kansas once. Okay. And the train ride through all of those strange states, that was fucking amazing. Yeah. At one point I was on the train and there was it was 8 hours of nothing, right? Like there's no people, no anything. You don't see one single building. And there was one guy, one house with one guy sitting in his boxer shorts, flipping off the train as we went by, like violently flipping us off. And I thought like he does that 3 times a day. I love that dude. But that was very much like, that was my vision of how America should be. Not that I don't love America as it is. I'm just saying it could do with a bit more, you know.
A bit less people. Is that what it could use? Maybe everywhere could probably use a little bit.
Yeah. I think we're working on it. We are killing people at an astonishing rate. We should. And no one's fucking anymore. So that's something. Yeah, we're not going to have any, like, we're taking care of it.
Birth rates are down. 50 years. Death rates are up. You know,
yeah.
It'll equalize.
We're getting there.
Yeah. So you say then the 90s, what was your, you know, besides like you like in Vertigo, like what titles were you reading? Which ones were your go-to?
Well, like I think my favorite of them all was probably Preacher. Steve Dillon was a huge deal to me. And I realized that when I get the question, like, why do you write comics? There's a very specific moment where I was writing a novel because I always knew I wanted to write. And I got to the point where all I wanted was to have one of Steve Dillon's silent panels. I just wanted the reaction of someone. And I realized like you can't do it. So I just needed to write comics instead. So that night I sat down and I researched how to write a comic script, and I wrote my first comic script within the next sort of week or something, and it felt so right compared to anything I've done before. Mm-hmm. Because meanwhile, I was sort of I kept on with the geekiness, and I had created a tech company. I sold the tech company. I have done a bunch of sort of digital nonsense, a lot of design. I do art. But nothing sort of felt as right as comics did. So that's what I stuck with.
That's awesome.
Yeah. When did, so with the, you were saying the tech companies and stuff, like when you first got into this, you know, we were talking kind of like 2020. So what was your like last job before you were like, I'm a Marvel a writer or, you know, Dynamite writer? You know, what was the last thing?
What was the last job? Oh, fuck. I don't know. I did a bunch of like cookbooks. I've written and edited like a 30-ish cookbooks.
Are you a good cook?
I'm decent. I think the main point for the publisher was that I delivered on deadline. I would just, they would give me some job, and then when the deadline came around, there would be a PDF that I designed and written. Like everything would just be ready, and no one really. I shouldn't say this on the air, but they just sent it off to the printer. So, but I do get a lot of people still use the books and send me messages. Like I have one typo in one of the recipes for a stew that people keep. Like every year, they keep being like, "Hey, there, you know, there's an extra bottle of wine in this." I'm like, "Yeah, I do know now. I do know." But
just
keep
reminding you about your errors. it's very sweet.
It means that people are still reading them and using them, which I think is a good thing. I'm just saying, it's every year, like when autumn comes around, because this is a book with stews and soups and everything, and I get like a couple of people being like, "Hey, are you aware?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am indeed." But yeah, I was doing some cookbooks and a lot of like digital consultancy, and I don't know, different things. I've been a freelancer for the past 20 years or something, I think. Wow. So there's look, if whatever people would pay me, no, that sounded horrible, never mind.
That's fine. You can continue with that. I like that answer.
Yeah.
See what that was? That one was
money good. Job. Money job. That's good.
Yeah. No. So listen, I get so many. I like this keeps coming up because I keep getting them. Like people being like asking me to send them feed pics and offering me a quite decent amount of money for, I mean, shaving my big toe or whatever on camera. So that's something, I suppose. If the comics thing fails, it's good to have a backup.
Yeah. Man, society is really devolving for sure.
Well, you can say that, or people are just getting in touch with themselves, like they're just finding their true self.
Yeah, I've always.
I would never say that. Not ironically, by the way. Just so we.
So, Marvel, you kind of been writing with Marvel for a while now, correct?
Four years.
What was your first title with them that you started with?
It was Jane Foster of Valkyrie. I took over for Al Ewing because he was co-writing with Jason Aaron. And Al, is, obviously, is a busy man, and Jason is also a busy man, so they needed a co-writer. But by that time, I'd done a couple of books for myself. I was doing sort of the conventions and everything you do. I just had one paying gig at DC that was never made, which is sort of a heartbreaking thing. But the editor quit, and I don't think anyone's ever read the script. But I was still I was slowly working in comics. And then I met Jason at New York Comic Con, and I suppose they were already looking for a co-writer at that point. So he's like, she's Norwegian, she writes comics, she tells horribly embarrassing stories. This is perfect. So he sent some of my books to Will Moss, who took a look and decided, okay, let's give her a shot. So when I got that opportunity, I sort of figured, okay, I'm going to try to show them what I can do. And hopefully they'll let me stick around. And they did.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting, is one thing. I mean, I've been reading your books for a while now, and it seems like you've kind of been brought in a lot of times on like the end of runs, you know what I mean? Like whether someone has left, like you took over Donny Cates' Thor run towards the end, the Venom run you're currently writing as well. And they've been great. And how is that? Before we move on to Carnage, because we're excited. Like I was very excited to see that you got the Carnage run. And I'm like, awesome. Now she's going to get her own title, kind of gets to spread her wings a little bit. But like, what's it like taking over some run that's already kind of put like the storyline in place? Like, is it hard to kind of weave it in there? Like, what's that like?
Well, sometimes it is. And I think for Thor, it was interesting just because I didn't have a specific storyline that we were running towards. In fact, we had a few things that we wanted to sort of not do in case they could be done in the future. But we needed to tie up a few loose ends that were sort of complicated to tie up without doing the original thing. And I think you can sort of tell there are some clumsy parts in that story, but I'm overall sort of very happy with the fact that like Will is an amazing editor, and Michelle is sort of the two of them on the book are just brilliant to work with. They let you do pretty much whatever you want as long as the story is there and heading in the direction that it should do. And in this case, it was sort of like, I just need to land the plane so Al can take over and do his thing. Having said that, I would love to at some point do my own sort of Thor and start over in without having all of the things that we would need to fix. But getting to work with like Nick Klein, which was just it's just such a fucking delight. He's so good. I think he's one of the absolute best working today, especially at Marvel. And I say that knowing that there are I would say one of the main, the nicest aspects about working with Marvel, and I do love being able to play around with all the characters. It's the artist that you get to work with because they're just so good. And it is a playing around with the best in the business, and of the best in the business, Nick is fucking like he's leading the pack. So, I mean, it was a joy to do the entire run with Thor. But I do hope at some point that I get to do my own Thor. I feel like it is. I'm named after Thor, for fuck's sake. Must be count for something.
Yeah. How is that? How's that like Norse mythology? Like, obviously, you did the Mighty Valkyries. You did some other stuff with Jane Foster, and then doing the Thor. Like, does that come natural to you? Is that something that you've loved, like growing up, and now you're like, oh, this is perfect. I can put this on paper.
I mean, I'm a parody of a Norwegian in the sense that like my mother, like I'm named after Thor. My mother used to bring us to like Viking festivals growing up. So there are a bunch of pictures of me in full Viking garb sitting around. Like it is, that was my childhood. We have one of the biggest burial mounds in Northern Europe, just a few hundred meters away from here. And I spent a lot of time doing, like, you know, shooting with bows and arrows and, you know, all that nonsense that didn't seem out of place until I started working with Americans, and everyone's like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like, well, it's truly not, though. Like, we're so nerdy. It's ridiculous. But it is something that was very near and dear to my heart, and sort of, I didn't think about it, but it was just a part of my childhood. And now it's suddenly a sort of, it's a cool thing that I know all of these stories, and I just have to not tell my mother about what I'm doing. She still hates Jason for burning down Yggdrasil, you know, the tree.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. She read that once and she's like, I don't like these comics. I'm not sure. I desperately tried to sell her on it, but she's like, nah, I don't know.
Does Jason know about that? What's his feelings?
Oh, I told him and it broke his heart. Because the thing is, like, his mother loves my comics, which is sort of my greatest achievement ever, I think, that she goes to the comic store and buys my comics. And then my mother is like, Jason, oh, the fucker. It's so great.
It's amazing. There needs to be like a, where Justin and I were talking about some random stuff. We're talking about like Bravo TV shows. There should be some kind of like a TV show about comic book writers' mothers and like the wars that occur behind the scenes. I would watch that with
that would be relish. Amazing. I would like to see that. I find my trying to explain to my parents what I do is a sort of it's a losing battle, and I've been trying to do it for a long time, and sometimes I have to I wrote Darth Vader this year, and I thought, like, surely they've heard of Darth Vader. And Dad's like, is that the Star Trek thing? And I'm like, yeah, it's sure, whatever, space nonsense, I don't know. It's just, but it's very sweet when they see that other people are excited. They're like, maybe am I excited about this? Maybe I am, I don't know.
Do they check your social media?
God, I fucking hope not. I think at some point they listened to a podcast where I said something about my mother and how I don't think she's proud of me, and she came by and she was like, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, I don't know, it doesn't feel natural though. I think you so but I don't know. I don't think so. I think they like most of Norway, it's just a thing that I do, and I try to explain what I do, and no one quite understands it. But then it's very nice to come to the US and I went to Baltimore this year, and it's just a delight to talk to people who's actually read the comics.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, so you said you kind of have a shop over there in Norway, but like, what is the comic book community like in Norway? It's obviously different than America, right? Or it's,
well, we don't have the single issues, which is sort of the main. We do have, well, that's not exactly true, because we have some things that you can buy sort of in the grocery stores, but they're mostly like children's, like Donald Duck and some different things. And then we do have a bunch of lovely people who make like cartoons of like series of different kinds. And then we have a lot of graphic novels. There's a whole like Nordic manga thing happening now, which is quite interesting. I mean, when we say Nordic manga, it doesn't actually look like manga. It's just more manga-ish than what we would usually do. So everyone's just like, oh, that's the, you know, the Japanese stuff. But the stories are very interesting, and there's a lot of Norwegian Norse mythology inspired stories that come out of it, which is, I find it interesting how that suddenly has some sort of value, because within Norway we're all sick of it. Mm-hmm. Like everything is the Northern Lights and wolves and whatever, and we're all tired of it. And then we go outside the country and people are like, is that a moose? Fantastic. That's why I keep every time I have a cabin in the Swedish forest, and I have a trail cam that sort of catches all the animals that runs around the cabin. And people mostly know me through the videos of like defecating foxes and I don't know, the bunnies.
I think Americans enjoy, you know, and Zach and I both love North mythology, Roman, Greek, all that, just because, you know, between like video games and then and reading comic books and reading books, novels, seeing movies, you know, we really appreciate that. And I feel like that's the opposite. It's the opposite on, you know, people from overseas. You know, they if they come from any country, they always want to go to New York. And I live in New Jersey. It's 40 minutes to get to New York. I'm like, ugh, New York. Like, it's like terrible. But like, you know, you want to show off, you know, like, because that's where the City of Lights and Times Square and Broadway. And
but you don't go to, but the thing is, New York is fucking fantastic, but just don't go to Times Square and go and have like proper steak.
I think it's also, you know, obviously America's a newer country. We don't have the legends and the lore that like Norway has with Norse mythology or Great Britain has with Arthurian, you know, stuff like that. Like, I mean, our lore is probably the best we got is the Wild Wild West. I mean, that's really our, if you're going to go lore of America, that's kind of what we have. So we're all fascinated with it. We're all fascinated with any kind of Roman mythology, any kind of lore, because it's so different than what America's based off of. You know, America's based off of, hey, we got a couple guys who didn't want to be taxed. Let's burn this bridge to the ground and take over, you know, which shit. I'm like, why is that not happening all the time? Who likes to be taxed? So, but yeah,
but you know, I think that's kind of cool though. And I realized at some point that the sort of Northern mythology, it feels very much, it makes total sense when you live here. And I haven't really thought about that before, how because, you know, the cold and the darkness and the brutality of it all, it doesn't, I'm going back to the weather now, just so we're clear, because
that's part of it. The weather is so,
that's the point. The seasons sort of run us to the point where, like, because now it's dark all the time here, and it gets to you in a way that you can't really describe. It's just, it's there as an entity, the fucking darkness. And then at some point, it'll be light all the time. And it's, changes how we act and how we, like, I realized first time I went far, far, far up north, I did an exhibition for Knut Hamsun, the Knut Hamsun Center. I did all the graphic design there. And when we were installing it, we had to go far up north where the sun never sets. So it's like the sun is like on the sky, shining away in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And I went there, and we were working away. And at some point we had one of those, oh, is it dinner time soon? And they're like, oh, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you idiots. and I realized, like, somewhere in me, you usually get some hints from your environment, like what's the time and what you're supposed to do. And when that's gone, it sort of fucks with your brain a little bit. So now when I'm old and I do all the things, like I have a therapy lamp that beams light in my face to sort of try, desperately trying to convince me not to go into some sort of hibernation until the sun comes out. Because it is, yeah. But it makes sense when you look at Norse mythology, like, it's the brutality of it all makes sense to me. And then I find it interesting when I...
cold.
Yeah.
You're just pissed off. They're sick of being cold all the time.
I know.
Pisses off everyone.
And sometimes, like, the easiest way is just, like, if you can just beat the fuck out of these people, then we can go back inside and light a fire. And then, like, every sort of, like, the frost giants and everything, if you walk around in Norway, you will see them. Like, they are there. It makes sense to me.
Oh, that's cool.
Just because you get the sort of the play of the light and the play of the colors on the sky against, you know, the mountains and the boulders and the trees, and it all makes sense. And I'd never thought about that until I started traveling and spending a lot of time in, you know, America and other places but that's absent, you know.
So before we move on to symbiotes, I still got to talk about one of the things. So I'm an X-Men guy. I love X-Men. That's probably my favorite. That's my go-to title team and everything. And you're writing Realm of X right now, which is kind of another, you know, Norse mythology with an X-Men spin to it. You got Vanaheim in there, and I'm really enjoying your Realm. This is actually the title I was kind of, one of the, out of all the Fall of X titles, I was like, this one seems really interesting, and I was looking forward to it. And I like the roster you have, because you talk about 90s, you got Marrow in there, who is like your classic 90s, you know, like not maybe the greatest, she's not the greatest character, but she's so cool. And there's
what
something.
Are you saying? She's the Meryl. Greatest character.
I love Meryl, but people do not like, and I don't understand. Like, she comes from the era of like Meryl and Maggot and like the characters in X-Men for a while where people are like, what's going on here? But I love her. And then you've got Dust in there, and I love the inclusion of Typhoid Mary. But did you get to choose these characters? So that's my question. Did you get to choose which characters you used here?
Well, we knew we wanted magic. So that was sort of the one thing. And Dani was a sort of, that made sense, right, that she would be on the team. And the book was for a long time called Valkyries of X, which would never truly work. But we knew we wanted to take them somewhere and do something. But I got to choose, like we obviously agreed, and me and the editor Lauren, we went through a long list of potential candidates. But I got them all. Like, it was very happy with my roster. Yeah. I think the only thing I'm not like, we can talk about this. Zach, what do you think? What makes a good X-Men comic? Since you're an X-Men fan.
So first off, I mean, this is not necessarily the answer, but in Marvel, the best characters, the best female characters are all X-Men. X-Men have almost, and I love, you know, there's male X-Men characters that are among my favorite characters of all times, but X-Men does women the best, period. They always have, in my opinion. And what makes X-Men good? They've got to be on, like, I've really enjoyed the Krakoa age. It's cool how they're finally on the up. Like, they're on the win. Like, we're so much better than everyone. We resurrect. No one can stop us. What makes a good X-Men comic is they're down and out of their luck. They are fighting for survival all the time. Everyone hates them. Everyone fears them. That's the best. They're alone. And they bicker with each other. So they're like this family of misfit toys all the time, the X-Men. They can never get their shit together. Because if they would, they'd be running the world.
Yeah, they would truly. Yeah. No.
So I don't know. What makes the best X-Men character? No,
it's a great answer. I've been wondering. It's been on my mind for months now. This was my first sort of team book with a bigger team. And I realized at some point that all the things that I wanted to do, I don't have the space to do it. And it was sort of heartbreaking in a way, because there are so many things that we could have delved into and sort of handled properly, but that we couldn't. Mm-hmm. But I love it. I hope other people do as well. It's always hard to tell. And I, as it comes to like what makes a good X-Men comic, I've realized like they need to be miserable. They need to be a little bit horny. Like, there needs to be some sort of horniness somewhere. Even if we are in, like, we're making comics in 2023 and apparently no one is horny anymore.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
And so the X-Men are like, you go back to like the Claremont era, and you always, it was, you know, Cyclops and Jean, Wolverine and Jean, Aurora and Forge, Rogue and Gambit. And now there's like, you're like, you're right. No one's horny anymore. There's like no relationships occurring anymore. That's strange. It's very strange.
But it is a sort of, it is fascinating how, because I realize, I shouldn't say this on the air, but there you are. I realized at some point by going through, I bought someone's comic collection, and I realized when getting into the boxes that it's mostly porn. Like, it's mostly like comics porn from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And not all of it is like porn, but there's a lot of, we're spending a lot of time on a few, like on things that we shouldn't necessarily need to use 4 pages for this woman to get changed. You know what I mean? Like, and it's just like, it's that's odd things. Like, in the middle of the story, they needed to go to a brothel because that's just how it is. And we can't just skip it. We need to show it, you know, that kind of stuff. And I realized I fucking loved that stuff growing up. You know, when you're a teenager and you're running around and you're horny, you want some, you know, something in your comics, right? Yeah. But I mean, I am European, and like everything is horny. Or it was. I suppose it's not anymore, because we get our influences from the rest of the world. Yeah. From you guys. We are blaming you guys.
The Protestant Americans. No, X-Men's tough. I think one of the things I've really liked the most about the Krakoa age was the reemergence of characters like Meryl, and these characters that hadn't been done in a long time. Like, it can be tough with the library of characters with X-Men, because you have the Cyclopses, the Wolverines, the Rogues, the Storms, and these are the great characters, right? And so everyone wants to write them. Everyone's got these stories, but the Wolverines, you see them all the time. And it just, I like the team books, like your book, like the Realm of X book. I mean, Magic is probably the most popular character in that book right now, in terms of like where she's at in the X world these days. She's probably the most prolific character there, but not a lot of those characters have these, like you put Wolverine in there and he dominates. It just, unfortunately, no matter what you do with him, he just dominates the story. And I like these books that have these offshoot characters. The other one I'm really enjoying is the,
Vault of X, or the Children of the Vault.
Yeah, that one was pretty good too, but Dark X-Men, the Dark X-Men. It's got like Madeline Pryor, and Havoc is one of my all-time favorite X-Men. It's got Azazel and just like these maggots in there as well. So it's just like these characters that don't get a lot of game time. And so that's what I've really liked about the Krakoa Age. But yeah, I like Realm of X, and it's what, five issues? It's going to be five issues, correct?
It's going to be four. It should have been five. If I was to sort of handle all the interpersonal nonsense that we wanted to do, I realized it would have been like 10 issues. But we had four issues, and one of them is oversized, like the first one. But I mean, we get there. I'm just saying it would have been interesting. And it's, I think, getting back to sort of the taking over books for people, I think... being able to, when you just do miniseries, and I do a lot of miniseries, you can't really dwell on the personal stuff too much. You have to sort of get to the point, the plot, and the plot is very plot driven, and that's fine. But I realize like that what people come up to me and talk about, that's always the personal stuff. It's that I sort of sneak in between all the punching. So it would be interesting to do an ongoing at some point, and being able to sort of steer the personal arcs from the very beginning and sort of get to have a development throughout the story. It's also interesting when you do X-Men, because no one wants their favorite characters to be miserable. But if we're going to use them in anything, we do need them to be miserable. Right. So it's a lot of shouting from Twitter, and then hopefully everyone will be happy in the end for 45 seconds, and then we'll start torturing the characters again.
I think the thing with established characters, and Zach and I talk about this all the time, like what's a good series, whether it's a 10 issue run or 15 issues, it's great when you're building a world and you tell a story and that's it. But when you have established characters, like all the X-Men have been around for, you know, many, many years, having a 4-issue miniseries doesn't give you a lot of time to do what you want to do. Right. Like you said, you want to do an ongoing, or maybe even 10 issues, because like Marrow and Maggot, now these characters are been around for so long, they haven't gotten their time to shine, and people are only going to read them for 4 issues. Are we going to see them again? Like, are they going to come
back to the shelf? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you'll get some other characters in the next book.
Yeah. And when you have 4 issues and 5 main characters plus like a couple of also main characters just on the other side of the team, there we don't have the space to sort of delve into anything, basically, which is because it's all there, like it's all there on the paper and it's all there in the back of my mind. So it was a frustrating experience to sort of realize and accept that it's not going to come through on the paper or like in the finished material, which is just sort of sad. But I don't know, like if you're going to do a 10 issue something, I'm not sure you would use Marrow. I would love it. I think it would work. But Marrow is the one character that I keep getting people be like, so Marrow? But why? I'm like, what? Isn't it?
She was the female Wolverine before X-23. Like, that's really, and they didn't really develop her enough. I mean, she came out, she had the bones. I mean, she was feral pretty much. She was like a Morlock who was angry. She was a bad guy kind of at first. Like, she's a very interesting character, and there's stuff to develop there. They even had the period of time where she could control her bone growth, and she looked like a normal person, which was, you know, one of the issues because she was so grotesque initially and she hated it. But yeah, she has a lot of development, you know, that you could do with her. And it's so interesting, characters like that, like Justin said, like you have these established characters, like it's hard to mess with like Cyclops's storyline. Like, how do you do anything new with Cyclops or Jean Grey? Like, it's, they've already been kind of done, but Marrow's relatively untouched in the long like span of her character. You could bring in a love interest and shake it up and do something different or whatever, you know, it's, there's a lot of room to maneuver with a character like that. So I always get excited when I see these, like, you know, C-list, D-list type characters, so to speak, like brought back, because I'm like, cool, maybe we'll get something here. So
yeah, it's fascinating because there are so many X-Men books and people keep complaining that there are too many X-Men books, but I feel like there needs to be more. I don't know.
More, keep them coming. Less more, other books, all
more
X-Men.
Comics. Yeah, all X-Men, that's the thing.
Nothing in Marvel except X-Men. Let's just do that. That's I'd be happy there. So, but let's move out of that then, and let's start talking some symbiotes here. So you said we talked earlier, you're writing Venom right now also, which is kind of a great precursor to the symbiote life, right? And moving into the Carnage. So how are you enjoying Venom, actually? Like,
see, Venom is a sort of, I didn't know that I would enjoy it as much as I do. There is the element of the sort of the goo punching goo that I had to get into. And I had a conversation with Alex Packnadel about this, who's written some symbiotes before, and he did a sort of thing. He took up two action figures and he went, this is what it is. You just have to smash these two together at some point and you should be fine. I'm not sure that's entirely true, but I found a sort of relief in the idea of, oh, we just need, at some point, there needs to be some spectacular, nonsensical fight scenes and we should be fine. But I took over from Ram, who's obviously a very mindful, very good writer, and I'm working with Al Ewing, and I'm doing the sort of Dylan storyline, and Dylan currently has Venom.
Yeah.
And Eddie is somewhere, and Dylan doesn't know where. So trying to, like, Dylan has a very specific, like, we have something very specific he needs to do. But while he's doing that, there needs to be a storyline and there needs to be different things that happen. So we need some story arcs in between there. Mm-hmm. And it's been thoroughly enjoyable to do, even if, like, I realized at some point, we do have a lot of young boys with symbiotes at this point.
Yeah, Toxin, right? Yeah.
Norman, Red Goblin.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teenagey boys with symbiotes who, and it's a sort of like, realized at some point, like, everyone has daddy issues. Like, it's just like, it's just Venom daddy issues, yeah. and chains, apparently. That is the most, like, my first issue of Venom, and we brought the chains back. Like, Venom has chains, and that
was Ghost Rider-esque. It was awesome. Yeah,
yeah. And all of my Twitter was just people being like, oh, hell yes, the chains are back. I think you're enjoying this on a level that I was not anticipating, but great. I was taking over from Ram. So Carnage was sort of, when I got to do Carnage, I could go and do whatever I wanted. And within Venom, we're still in a sort of, the age rating is something, I don't know what you're calling it over there, but it's something. We're trying to keep it sort of relatively readable for everyone, and no one told me anything when I was doing Carnage. I just wrote the script that I thought was sort of, this is what Carnage should be, and then we sent it to editors. We're like, yeah, this is great, and we started drawing our Perry, who is doing the, like, it's just a joy to see the pages come alive. He's so good. I don't think I've had a single note on anything he's done. It's just right where it's supposed to be. And at some point in, like, issue 3 or something, we had a flying intestine, I think. And I'm not sure if that was the reason they had to do, like, they realized that, oh, we might not have, there might be a miscommunication somewhere because this is not appropriate for whatever age rating they put on it. But I was like, I don't know, I just wrote the thing, and then Perry did exactly what I wanted, and now it's there. I don't know. And I do think we had to remove the intestine, but we still sort of, that was when like a week later I was tagged in a bunch of, like, oh, they had to up the age rating for Carnage.
Yep. Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago of how they warned retailers that it's not like a teen anymore. It's more of a mature title for the first two issues.
But it's
it's perfect.
It's Carnage. Oh,
yeah. It's Carnage.
How could you not? And I think it was, I mean, we do, there are some horrible, horrible images in there, and it only gets worse. Like the first issue is it's fine. I think it's relatively fine. We sort of, when we got away with the first issue, we just kept going, I suppose. I don't know. But I think it might be as much the subject matter as it is the visuals of it, because there's a lot of gore in Venom, but it's more like gooey gore. Yeah. It's not as much, you know, people being, I don't know.
Yeah.
There are a lot of heads flying in Carnage. But having said that, I think for my sake, like I realized when you write a Marvel, like when you write a comic, whatever I deliver to Marvel, like a Marvel book returns, it is a sort of fascinating thing. Like I can, whatever script I make, I will send it in, and then some time goes by, and then a Marvel book returns. And that's exactly how it's supposed to be. But with Carnage, sort of, I delivered a script. Perry did exactly what I wanted him to do. And then it came back as a sort of me thing, which is interesting. So if people hate this, I'm going to be, I mean, that's fine. It's perfectly fine. But it is, I think, the most me book I've ever done at Marvel, which is horrifying. When it's Cletus Kasady and Carnage, right. But I mean, I feel very close to Cletus. He's not a good man, but he's a very interesting man.
Go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much, obviously, with spoilers, but for the people that have kind of read the preview and seeing that, you know, Cletus is back, you know, I'm a huge Carnage fan. So, like, the stuff that, like, when Crane and Zeb Wells did their little mini and the Jerry Conway, like, I'm a huge fan of that run. The last one that kind of ended, I really wasn't, like, you know, what can we expect from the series?
Well, I fell in love with Carnage in the 90s when it was very sort of raw and rough in a lot of ways. And there are some great stories and some horrible phrases and a lot of sort of a sort of very sort of 90s. I don't know. That was what I thought about when I heard, like, oh, go write Carnage. So I was trying to figure out how we could do that, how we can bring Cletus back from the 90s, so to speak. Mm. And that's sort of exactly what we did in the most sort of symbiote nonsense way possible, which is just he just throws up a version of Cletus Kasady. And it's just, don't overthink that, people. Just go with it. Just, it's Cletus Kasady. Who, it's great. But I wanted to do something like that. But we knew that, like, the last thing that happened was Carnage was sort of realizing that he had the power. Like, he was so powerful at this point that he might have the powers of a god. And if so, what is a god? And what kind of god would he be? The first issue is him sort of trying to figure that out and giving Cletus Kasady the sort of, like, if we're a god, what kind of god are we? Figure it out. And Cletus tries to, I suppose. But Cletus, I find he's more street level than anything else. And I think Cletus Kasady and Carnage works best when you have it, when the stories are sort of street level and based in humanity in some way, right? Yeah. That's when it's supposed to hurt.
Did you listen to our episode like 2 weeks ago? I literally said that. I think that's the best thing about Carnage is, like, he's a sadistic killer. It needs to be brought down to earth. Killer, when they did the Venom in, like, space, like the whole Space Knight series, and, you know, him in this, like the last series where he was out in space as well. It's not Carnage. It's not the Cletus. Stuff, like, he's a sadistic killer.
Yeah, and I think people like, you know, different things, and I see the point of a lot of the different stories, and I also see definitely the point of having that, oh, we need to do something new with this character.
Right.
What is the thing we're going to do? But I always find that going back to basic sort of works in a way. Mm. Like, I did have a Red Sonja too. We just went, you know, back to, it's not Red Sonja in space or in you know, Wisconsin. It's Red Sonja being Red Sonja. And with Carnage, I sort of, that was the thing that interested me with the character, was somehow getting to, like, back on the streets, having this power, and then just trying to figure out what to do with it. I don't know, it's the most fun I've ever had writing anything. I think you can tell on the page that I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Just see what people think tomorrow. Because yeah, we are recording this on Tuesday and it's going to be out tomorrow.
Correct. Yes. And we had talked, so we had kind of said this, in Marvel has a tendency to kind of take all these villains, right, and make them anti-heroes and stuff like that, whether it's Venom from the original days or Magneto, or even Dr. Doom has had his time as a hero. And Carnage, and Thanos as well, has kind of had his time as a hero. But Carnage seems to be like the one character. There's just nothing redeeming. You can't redeem Cletus Kasady in Carnage. And it's so great.
I mean, no. No. Not unless you were going to, it would be need to be like, oh, if you, there was a world war and some very bad people did some very bad things, right. Or something. I don't know. Yeah. But then at some point he would turn on you and then he'd start killing you. Because that is, I was trying to figure out, because every time you have a fictional serial killer, because there is a sort of distinct difference between actual serial killers and fictional serial killers, because we do like to make our fictional serial killers a lot more interesting than real serial killers scarier, tends to be. Yeah, and they usually have some sort of motive, and they have some sort of, oh, back when my mother read me the poem, that's when I started craving blood. But in reality, it's just people who accidentally kill someone and then shove them under the bed for 2 weeks and still started smelling. Like, it's not, like, serial killers are, in general, very boring and predictable, and they shouldn't happen, really. But Cletus, I was trying to figure out if we ever tried to give him some sort of grand backstory that explained why he likes to kill people. It's just, I just want to kill people. And it's sort of, it's a delightful thing to play around with, and it is a sort of, we get to the point from time to time where, like, because he's so powerful now, we could just kill everyone, but that's not fun either, right? Like, because there needs to be something there. So it's a fun thing to play around with, and I do hope that people are not going to hold it against me, that I just, I love it. It's such a delightful thing.
So I read the issue. And I've been reading the past runs of Carnage as well. And then for the most part, I've actually really enjoyed even the previous run. I've really enjoyed the Carnage stuff. And I've never been like a big Spider-Man universe kind of person. But I've always enjoyed Carnage because he's just such a bad guy always. And it's like, cool, I know what I'm getting here. It's Carnage. The name says it all. Here we go. So I loved, and we had in the past run, we've had this like split, right? You had the symbiote and then you had Cletus Kasady for a very long time, have not been together. You kind of had the ghost of Cletus in this, the past run. Cletus actually has been dead, what, since the century threw him in the sun, I think is when he was really like finally died. So it's great to see Cletus come back. I didn't like the symbiote acting a fool on his own. Like, that never really meant anything to me. It was just, okay, cool, it's a space alien. Like, it's just, it's not Carnage without Cletus. It's just a symbiote. So I loved, and maybe it was moderately nonsensical, the vomiting up of, but
don't overthink.
Yeah, I agreed. And like everything we've got with like the Null and stuff, and like the Hive and the Codex, like that fits. Like, it makes sense. Like, his DNA is somewhat inside the symbiote. So I loved it. I think, and I'm trying to keep it, I'm trying to make sure I keep it not, or spoiler free for everyone to enjoy, but it was, I don't know how this is, this, it was gory. I mean, there are some scenes that were amazing. Like, what? Awesome. I loved it.
Really? Because I thought the first issue was sort of, I thought it was, it's not that bad.
It's compared to other Marvel books. I mean, you, like you said, you get the goo with Venom in this, but with Carnage, you're seeing blood fly. Yeah, I mean, I'm picturing the one, I don't even know if I should say it, but like where you kind of like peels a guy in half, sort of.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
That was awesome. That was when I saw that page, I was like, oh, Perry, we're gonna,
that was really
it's gonna fucking work. It's gonna be great.
It was pretty cool. But it has very much, I feel like he has the vibes of and I'm sure if I'm just dumbing it down, it has very much, and like you said, he's a god, but like, look, what's fun about being a god? And Cletus doesn't care about anything other than killing people, and he wants to have fun with it. It had very much like Joker vibes to it. We're like, this whole time Joker knows who Batman is, but who cares what his real identity is? Let's mess with him. Let's fuck with him and make this shit raw. And that's what it kind of feels like to with Carnage.
I'm very happy to hear you say that, because I think it's when you have Cletus, who grew up, like, he his father killed his mother, and then he was caught for it, which I have later on. This is a mild spoiler, but that is, like, is Cletus being so disappointed with his father because he couldn't even get away with murder, which I sort of found delightful.
It's fitting.
Because there's always a moment, right, when you find out your parents are just humans, and that was the moment for him when his father couldn't even get away with murder. And I think he grew up in this Catholic home for naughty boys or something, I don't know. And I would say that his idea of religion would be very much influenced by the Catholic faith. And I'm having a lot of fun with that. And I realized at some point, but being Norwegian, being very much like, I never, it was never even an option to believe in God in my life. It's just been, there are stories on, you know, I have no... I don't feel bad about fucking around with it at all, and I do hope that people are not going to be offended. I asked Marvel if we could have Cletus like on the cross on one of the covers. And we have another scene where we were crucifying someone. We realized like that might be like one bridge too far, like in America. And then we realized, oh, we do it all the time in X-Men, as long as there's an X instead of a cross.
That's true. Yeah.
So that might be a workaround, that we just crucify people on a random X instead of having an actual cross. But I don't know. So you should read along and see if we get to crucify people. Because I don't know.
I'm Catholic, so I'm excited for any kind of like Catholic leanings. Like, and I don't get offended very easily at all. So it's all storytelling and it's all fictional. So it's very enjoyable. And he does have that kind of vibe to him where he's, you know, you grow up Catholic and it's very much fire and brimstone. You know, it's like, hey, be afraid because you could go to this really horrible place. You know, it seems like he relishes that. Like, hell yeah, let's go there. Yeah.
But I do find, I would say, in defense of the Catholics, if we're going to be religious, you might as well go all out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You do. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much nonsense.
We own it. Yeah,
and it's
crazy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so if I were to ever be religious, I would think I would go for, I want all, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. I'll put in a word with the Pope for you when you're ready.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to.
So what do we have, like... What's the, and I don't know, obviously, if we ask any questions that you're not allowed to answer, because obviously the book drops Wednesday, the 22nd. How long is this run? Are we looking here? Do you have an end goal here? Do you know your story, where you're going towards the end with this?
I know the first 8 issues. Okay. And then we'll see. I know there are some Carnage plans for later, and I'm not sure if we get to keep going. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, and it might be that we just need the character somewhere else. It might be sort of just a natural end to the story if, like, we can't give him something to do that makes sense and sort of is interesting enough to follow along. Because I don't want to do like, oh, but now Cletus Cassidy goes to, you know, Asgard and starts killing people. I don't think that's gonna, but which is the sort of natural next step. It is a potential next step, right? It would be we're gonna upgrade from killing people because there's no longer a challenge to kill people, so we're gonna kill gods instead.
Yeah.
And that is a valid pitch, I think, but I'm not sure I would find that as interesting as what we're doing now, because we have Flash Thompson, who is anti-Venom. There's a lot of Flash fans around. I didn't know I'm a Flash fan.
Yeah,
Anti-Venom's awesome.
But I loved when he was, when Flash was Venom. That was great. That was the Remender run, right?
That's when it started.
Yeah. I love that series too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Flash is great.
Amazing. Yeah, and Flash is one of those characters that I think it's his a thoroughly interesting character, combined with the fact that I'm not entirely sure that he's technically alive. But right. He is there, and we are sort of playing around with that as well, sort of the resurrection of Flash and what actually happened, and why, if he really wants to be a hero, like he obviously does to a certain extent, right? Why wouldn't he be in an hospital saving children from cancer, which is true superpower if you think about it. We can heal anything, anyone, yeah. right? But he's not, though. Like he's running around the streets punching people. So there is a sort of playing around with Flash, and Flash is, as of right now, the only one who has understood that Carnage is up to something. So he feels a great responsibility to do something, and I love him for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we see as far as like Spider-Man? You know, are we going to get into that realm, or are you going to kind of stick with the anti-Venom Flash Thompson?
I mean, I would say that in the first we're doing some other characters, but Flash is the main mm-hmm. is the main one. But I mean, Carnage has a list of people that should die, of course, mm-hmm. along with a bunch of. It's mostly end up with people should die. That's the. I mean, it sounds so stupid when you talk about it, but it is sort of. I think it's more truth. There's more truth in the Carnage books than in any other book I've ever written. But it is also because I'm trying to sort of get the people involved and see the people who Carnage inspires, like who would see, because what we're seeing here in the Carnage books, they're sort of miracles, right? Like it is a burning bush, except it's fucking horrible. Mm-hmm. But if you see proof that there is some sort of creature out there that could be a god, how would you handle it? And how would you, how would 2023 people treat it? And what kind of conspiracy theories would sort of evolve from it? And I'm playing around with that a lot.
Man, the how do I say this without spoiling it? There's a scene at like the end of the book. It very much, maybe you don't know who. Do you know who David Blaine, the street musician, magician is?
Yeah.
Do you know what scene I'm talking about then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That was wild. So
I hate that I haven't read it yet. I hate that it's not Wednesday and I go grab it. You guys,
reading that issue and I was like, damn.
That's like some because Zach apparently gets his comics before the rest of us.
Yeah,
well, some way.
I can't reveal my sources. But what about, Kinoki, can you speak on this? Summer Symbiotes is coming up, right? Is that something you have to plan ahead for?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll see. And I was not to spoil anything in particular, but I would say that me writing both Venom and Carnage just seemed like a fucking missed opportunity to not do something. Mm-hmm. We have a lot to do and he has a lot to say. So because we need to get through all the sort of scripture according to Cletus Kasady. So I'm trying to keep the sort of character count down, but I do that in general. I sometimes find that when we add in, like I remember the first book I ever wrote for Marvel, like Will Moss, he was like, we can add Spider-Man in this if you like. And I had that moment of like, oh, how the fuck can I? Am I going to write Spider-Man properly? It's going to be in two panels? Mm-hmm. That feels like a fucking missed opportunity. So every time you add in one of those iconic characters, you have to make sure they work, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we did get Spider-Man in. So the first Marvel comic I wrote had like my first Spider-Man line. And I remember Jason texted me and he went, so have you written it yet? I was like, what? Your first Spider-Man line, have you written it yet? And I was like, oh, is this a thing? Should I be terrified now? And then I got terrified, of course, because I didn't know that I was supposed to be And it was a stupid joke about vegetarians, and I'm sort of, I don't know if it worked, but it is what it is. But it was a sort of teaching moment in the fact that the moment you bring on people, you have to make sure they work and they feel like, if you have Iron Man, he should feel like Iron Man for everyone.
Right.
So you have to be a little mindful about how many of them you bring in. And you don't want to tease a book and be like, oh, Spider-Man is going to join, and then have him in two pages and that's it, right? So yeah. I'm trying to make sure that we don't bring too many people in, but that we make sure that those characters get a proper arc. It's a miserable arc, but I mean, it's there.
Well, it's great. The first issue was amazing.
Very happy to hear it.
Yeah, and this is obviously going to come out after the book drops. So if you aren't picking it up, go back to your shop, put it on your pull list, do what you got to do. Definitely suggest, if you're a Carnage fan, I can't imagine you not like this run if you're a Carnage fan. Even if you are like a middling Carnage fan, you're going to enjoy this run.
very, very. You're the first person I've spoken to that's read it outside of, you know, the team. So yeah. I'm very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah. I mean, that's all.
Because I like it, and that's not always the case when you have a book out on Wednesday. Sometimes things happen in the, like, and you just, it is sort of, it is what it is. But this one I truly, truly enjoy. So if people hate this, then I mean, I think that's fine. But it's still, I hope they don't.
Well, yeah, I'll be buying it. I'll continue to keep picking it up. I definitely enjoyed it.
I can't wait.
So I know we're kind of going a little long. I guess I kind of lied to you when I said 20 to 30 minutes, but we could honestly.
See, Justin, that's my fault. I don't talk to anyone. I'm in Norway. It's freezing. I haven't spoken to anyone. I haven't.
No, it is. Happy to keep going, probably. So, but what I have a question. I want to, and then I'm sure Justin's got some questions. What character would you do if you had, okay, let's put this out. Let's say Marvel and DC, if you had full access to the whole library and you got to pick right now, which characters would you want to write next?
See, this is a horrible question that I get a lot, and you would think that there would be like that I had an answer. And the thing is, there are, in my experience, every time I get asked to do a character, I realize there is something to the character, and I'm sort of terrified that I would fuck it up if I would like to write like a really sort of old school Wolverine thing.
Okay.
That I would love that, and it would be just exactly what you think, like it would be him getting in bar fights and doing all the nonsense, but it would also be fucking great. I'm just saying. I like my old grumpy men. So for Marvel, probably Wolverine, or do like a proper Thor run. That would be amazing. For DC, Catwoman, probably. Maybe Satana would be...
Justin, Justin's getting excited here.
But I mean... These are just the two. I find that, like, especially when you have any sort of magical character at the moment, I find, and this is me being like not talking to anyone and sitting on TikTok and falling down the rabbit holes of different like witchy community and everything, I just feel like there's a lot of things you can do with the magic users these days, because the audience have lost their fucking minds, which is great. I enjoy the fact that you can convince anyone of anything in the days of TikTok and Instagram reels. Like, they're just
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have some very gross examples here, but I'm not gonna get into it. I do enjoy that every time I tell people that I enjoy the horrible little echo chambers that people make and post videos, they start sending me examples of it, and then my faith in humanity just gradually disappears, dwindles into nothing. But it is fun in a sort of storytelling sort of thing. I don't know.
So two questions. Well, one question and a thing that I think here's a perfect opportunity, as we've gotten to learn a lot about you pre-show and during this show, is I would love for you to write a 30 Days of Night in Norway.
Oh my God. I was literally thinking the same thing when she was talking about the daylight and stuff. Oh, bro. Yes,
that would be so cool.
That would be cool.
I'm a huge fan of like when it first came out and then the movies and then they've had so many spinoffs, but to have it, you know, not in like Alaska, like have it in Norway where these vampires show up, and obviously what you've done with Carnage, and like, yes, let's do 30 days.
I feel like that checks out. Feel like that should be something that I could do. This is always horrible when something feels too perfect in case I would, you know, fuck it up. That's the that's how it is in every sort of reality TV competition ever. Every time someone is like, oh, this is my wheelhouse, they fuck it up, which is great. But yeah, I would like that. Please. Thank you, Justin. Yeah, you make that happen, please.
Let's talk to, I think IDW is the ones who still hold rights to that. Let's get on that. I think that'd be an amazing series.
That's not Boom, because Boom goes a little harder, I feel like, these days.
Yeah. But I think that's who still owns the trademark, but that's where it was last. But as far like a question for you, you are writing Venom, you're writing The Carnage. Is there anything else that's upcoming outside of the, you know, the big house of Marvel, DC? You know, any Image stuff or indie stuff that you're upcoming that has either been announced or, you know, you're on the
there are some cusp of? Things that are not announced that I'm enjoying, but I think are turning out pretty well. I'm also writing the a small Nightmare Before Christmas thing that's coming out at some point in 2024. Which might be interesting, but it is sort of, it's fascinating because it's Nightmare Before Christmas, but it's also Disney who the very American, very careful with what they put into the books. There's just been an interesting sort of journey for me. I'm not sure they'd read any of my comics before.
Don't send them Carnage.
No, or maybe I should have. Maybe that would be, I don't know. But that's awesome, that's coming up. That's sort of fun. But I'm very busy. That's something. I have a bunch of things coming up, and I'm thoroughly enjoying basically every moment.
How about cons? Any upcoming cons? When you coming back to the States next? What are your plans for 2024?
I have no plans in 2024. If you want to invite me to a con, I would love to go to basically anywhere in the States. I fucking love America. I give you a hard time in general because you are so easy to make fun of. Because, you know, like America is humanity on meth, right? Or on speed or something. Like,
we have a lot of both those things here too.
Yeah, I would imagine. And it's like, it's everything just up to 11, like in every aspect. And it's just glorious. And every time I'm in America, I think like, oh, this is, it's, I love it, but it's not great. Like, it's, you shouldn't be doing this. But I'm very happy to be here. That's the thing. The only thing I have upcoming right now is I'm going to Greece in a week, so right after this drop. So if you are in Greece, if you come to Athens Con and say hi,
that's
I'll
cool.
be there. Yeah. I know
I've always wanted to go to Greece.
Yeah,
I want to go. So
I'd like to go to the only big shows I know, like in Europe, is like Lake Como. Like they have the little Lake Como Con, like, and then Thought Bubble in UK. But yeah, I'd love to go to overseas con. Like, I just think, like, just to like to see the difference. So obviously, you've been to both. So what is the difference between, you know, you said you went to Baltimore and I went to Baltimore this year as well. You know, is it like the same in Europe?
No, I mean, that it is sort of, it's fast, especially like I just did Stockholm. And much as I love the Swedes, like they do not speak to you. Like they will, it is, and I can relate. I'm Norwegian. We don't speak to anyone either, but we're ruder. So if you want to speak to someone, we will, but the Swedes will not. Like it is, it's a very strange thing. America, everyone talks to everyone all the time. Like you have conversations in the fucking elevator, like insane people.
Yeah, it's horrible. Who talks in the elevator? It's disgusting.
The thing is, it's so freeing when you come from like Norway, where no one talks to you. Unless they have to, it's all just passive aggressive nonsense. I think like it coming here and trying to make friends must be a nightmare. But like going to America, you're like, oh, I have 10 new friends just from this elevator ride. Yeah. You don't though, but it feels like it. Yeah. Like some, you can fool yourself into thinking that you have friends now. And it is so. Like when I was in Baltimore, I think I don't think I ate lunch. Basically, I was just talking to people all the time, and it was delightful. But in in Europe, it's calmer. People are more sort of like they don't talk to you as easily. There's a lot of like awkward. Oh, now we looked at this. If I picked it up, do I have to buy it now? Especially the Brits do not know how to pick up something and then go, oh, this was not for me, and then walk away. So that's an awkward conversation. and I'm Norwegian. I don't know how to talk. Like, I don't know how to end the conversation with a British person. But it's all good. The bar con is great all over the place. That's the thing, right? Because one thing is the con itself, but it is the community that you meet when you meet people later. That's always the point of the comic cons.
So Justin, do you want to pitch the con for her to come to next year?
Well, yes, I think
there's only
there's only one con you need to go to, and it's actually close to you. So in Connecticut, it's called Terrificon. It's at the Mohegan Sun Casino. And you think people are like, it's at a casino. No. This is a legit con. It is 5-star hotel. Everything is underneath the casino. Like, it's the hotel, the convention center. There is tons of places to eat. There's tons of things to do. Very clean. Zach and I both gone. I mean, I've been there multiple times. This is like a comic show for comic shows. This is like none of that entertainment stuff.
It's just fun because of the community.
Yeah, because I've heard people had a great time over there. I can't picture it when people say it's in a casino. I'm like, but what's around there? Like, nothing. There's nothing.
You don't leave.
You don't ever need to leave.
You don't leave. Yeah.
No, but that's weird to me. But then I realized, like, I went to Heroes Con at some point, and I was walking around Charlotte, just looking at, because it's so beautiful. And I came from Frosty, creepy, springy Norway, and I went there, and it was just so hot and beautiful, and everything was in full bloom. And I was walking around, and then the police stopped me and were like, "What are you up to?" I'm like, I'm walking. Like, are you walking around? I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Isn't that what you do?" And then, like, "No, you're not supposed to walk."
We got a creepy Norwegian lady.
Yeah. I sincerely think someone called the police just because, like, there's a lady walking around. We don't like that. But I'm always baffled when I go to cons and you can't walk places to get things, and just like, "Oh, is you have to take a car to buy sodas?" No, of course you don't, because there's a kiosk in the hotel. Fucking love America.
Well, this one is, it's really fun. It's just, the con's great. I don't, like, Justin goes every year. I went once a couple years ago, and we're going again this year. And like I said, you're in there, you're hanging out, you do the con thing, but then you can dip out, you can go to the casino, you grab a couple drinks, and everyone's hanging out there. Everyone's staying at the casino. So once the con kind of shuts down, then you all meet up at the local country bar, little Wild West vibe for you. There's a ride, there's a mechanical bull that you can ride.
I would love to see you on it, Zach. That's going to be great.
Actually, I did it, and I was pretty impressive.
He was really good on it. I've done it every year, except for this past year. But
is that you sincerely go on the mechanical bull?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The guy is no joke.
That is relentless. Amazing.
I don't think I would do it again, though. I don't know. I'm old as well, and afterwards, your inner thighs are like in so much pain, and your hands from gripping. Oh, it's a nightmare.
I find that astonishing. It might be, am I a lot older than you guys? Like, what is going on? It's just, everything hurts all the time. Broke my back falling off a horse 20 years ago or something, and I realized, like, it didn't feel like a very serious accident before I hit the ground, if you know what I mean. I didn't think, like, oh, this is going to affect the rest of my life, but it did. I'm terrified of those fucking nonsense things. And you have to, like, unless you're an exceptionally hot woman, what are you doing on a mechanical bull? Like, you're not going to look cool.
No one,
like, that's not a thing. That's not, like, there's no way you're going to get up there and look cool.
Yeah, it's fun though. The con is a really good time. The community, and I feel like the people, it's still kind of like, and I'm saying this from only going one time, Justin's obviously the pro on this con, it's still kind of one of those cons that falls under the radar. So you really only get, like, the people who genuinely want to be there, like the good people in the community are going. You don't see a lot of, like, the influencers or some of the people you'll see that will show up for, like, you know, the big ones, the NYCC or Baltimore, those ones. So it's very wholesome, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the fact that, like, you can there's one morning I woke up, had breakfast, and I have Peter Tomasi sitting next to me, and we're talking about Batman and Robin one time, like 1 year, or like you could be playing craps or, you know, roulette. Yeah. And there's like a writer artist that is, you know, from DC Marvel. It's always
who did we
like,
ride in the elevator with? And we didn't realize it till later. Stephanie Phillips, right?
Stephanie Phillips.
Yeah.
See, but that is a lovely thing, though. And if Peter is going back, I will join, just because I also like to have breakfast with. That sounded horrible when I said it out loud. I like Peter a lot. He is a fun fucking guy. Mm-hmm. But I'd go. That's what I'm saying. Just invite me to your con. It's so easy to get me to go to America. It's the easiest sell in the world, just because I fucking love you guys.
Well, I know the promoter. Yeah. I'll definitely throw your name over to him without a doubt.
And I like to, whenever I travel in America, if I can just, like, I did Baltimore, and then I had a couple of days alone in Washington, D.C., and I got, or that's not technically true, I had a hotel right next to Dulles, so I could go to the aircraft museum mm-hmm. right there. Yeah. I set aside a day for it, but just because it's fucking brilliant, and just being able to travel alone and do shit like that is just, every time I'm questioning my life choices, I'm like, well, I'm here, I get to do whatever the fuck I want. It's amazing.
Well, that's where I'm actually moving next year, is Washington DC. So
really,
we'll be out there. Yeah, you can come adventure with us on the East Coast. Justin and I will both be out there, and all that stuff.
You should start taking your Stephen F. Edward-Hasey Museum, I think it's called, the Aircraft Museum. It is the most magical place on Earth. And I went there and I had some work to do. So I just brought my laptop and I sat down and I worked. And then whenever I would run out of inspiration, I would walk down to the aircraft. And I realized, had I been near there, that would be my daily fucking thing to do. I don't understand how you can be in that area without just having some sort of season tickets. I don't know, but yeah, good for you, lucky yeah. You I'll come visit.
Well, Justin, anything else? And we kind of
no, seriously,
this has been an awesome interview.
Yeah, this has been absolutely amazing. I cannot wait to read Carnage tomorrow when it comes out. And just, you know, we were talking about this months ago when it came mm-hmm. out, and then really a couple weeks ago with the different age restrictions that they were putting on it. So I'm really happy that we actually have the writer come on and talk about Carnage, because I'm a huge fan. So good luck on the whole series, you know, the series that you're writing, and you know, hopefully
thank
we
you.
Can definitely come on again. And if we see you at a con in 2024, without a doubt, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great. Let's do that. Well, thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
Well, we'll let you go. I don't know what your bedtime is, right? So it's going to, or you just woke up, so you're going to be up for another like 12 hours.
I'm going to work for the rest of the night. I'm going to, it's going to be one of those days. It's great. But I'm writing Carnage. I mean, I have no complaints in this world. I just need to, as I mentioned, I've been recovering from COVID. So I just had 1 week of doing absolutely fuck all and just hating every second of it. So I need to catch up.
Oh, something I want to say. Side note on the Venom run, more Sleeper.
Yes.
He's awesome. Sleeper is so great.
Sleeper is so fucking cool. And the thing is, like, I had someone be like, oh, Sleeper? Like, how could, of all the symbiotes?
Yeah. He's the coolest. And they don't give him anything. No one's done much with him.
Yeah. I would love to do more with Sleeper anytime.
Yeah. He's cool. So once again, Torin, thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoyed having you here. And hopefully maybe we can get back with you. Maybe before Summer of Symbiotes, we can check back in on the Carnage run or something, or you on again at any time. Hopefully we'll see you at a con, something like that.
That would be awesome. As long as you like it, though. Let's see how Justin likes it first, and then we'll see.
Oh, I know I'm going to enjoy this without a doubt. There's no, you both of you, the way you talked about it, Zach, I've known Zach many years, and when we talk about what we're like reading, and I have a good idea that I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this.
Yeah. There's not much that Justin reads that I don't like, and vice versa, I think. So we're pretty like on par with our tastes in comics. So
yes, good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. As long as you, but I mean, I will come back as I said, as long as you like it, and we'll.
For sure.
So I will consider. I will. That would be my review. If you invite me back, then you like it. If not, I'll be mortally offended and think about it for the rest of my life.
Well, fair. Well, thank you again. And for everyone, Justin, actually, anything sign up?
No, nothing. We're all good.
Happy Thanksgiving. Obviously, yes. Everyone's reading or listening to this after Thanksgiving. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your families. Stay safe. Christmas coming around the corner. And we'll catch you guys next week. Later.
Bye.